KQED.
From KQED Public Radio, this is Forum. I'm Scott Schaefer, here today for Michael Krasny. In this hour of Forum, the first votes for president will be cast in less than 3 weeks. The candidates have spent hours talking about Iraq, terrorism, immigration, and who has the right experience to be president. But where's the discussion of issues affecting cities? Housing, homelessness, AIDS, public schools, and infrastructure? Are the candidates talking about an urban agenda? And if not, why not? That's our topic in this first hour of Forum. We'll get started right after this. And welcome back to Forum. I'm Scott Schaefer, here today for Michael Krasny. Well, you might be thinking about Christmas shopping, but the candidates for president are mostly focused on the home stretch before voting begins in the Iowa caucuses and the first primaries in New Hampshire and South Carolina. Now, in a minute, we'll be talking about issues affecting cities and whether the candidates are addressing them or not in the campaign so far. But first, let's go to Des Moines, Iowa, where LA Times reporter Mark Barabak is following the candidates through the snow. And Mark, good morning to you.
Good morning.
Why don't you bring us up to date, first of all, on the latest happenings? It seems like new developments every few hours. What's happening on the ground in Iowa this morning?
Well, the big one of this particular hour is the endorsement. Governor Chet Culver's wife has endorsed John Edwards, which is a pretty big deal. It was a very big deal 4 years ago when Christy Vilsack endorsed John Kerry. Different dynamic this time, but still a good thing for Edwards. Hillary Clinton picked up the endorsement over the weekend of the Des Moines Register. It is a very, very, very tight race. And what's interesting to me is, you know, 4 years ago I was here, we had another very, very tight race on the Democratic side. What's really interesting is the Republican race, which is very wide open and very much in upheaval and fluid. And that's different.
Different than it was 4 years ago?
Different than it was 4 years ago. Even different than it usually is for Republicans. You know, the Republicans have a very hierarchical party, and it's sort of like the two parties have changed roles this election. Just to take it beyond Iowa for a second, you know, Democrats, it's sort of like a game of King of the Hill with Hillary Clinton sitting on top and everyone trying to knock her down. With Republicans, it's more like dodgeball with everybody throwing the ball at everyone else. That's much more typical of the way Republicans run their elections. You know, they tend to have sort of an anointed one and a challenger who tries to knock them off. Again, that's what's happening on the Democratic side. The Republicans are behaving this time much more like Democrats, with five candidates really in competition.
Now, Huckabee's doing really well in Iowa, but one of the questions has been, can he sustain that? Will there be enough momentum coming out of Iowa if he wins to really go on to the other states where he doesn't really have as big of a field operation as, say, Giuliani or Romney? What are you hearing about that? Is he beginning to gear up now?
A little bit. He's putting some staff on the ground. But the thing is, it's sort of like, you know, the momentum is sort of outstripping his ability to take advantage of it. He doesn't have a lot of people. He's gone from 3 to 17 staffers in Iowa. He doesn't have much of a staff in New Hampshire or much beyond it. So the question is, how far can momentum carry him? His big problem is we go from Iowa, which will vote on January 3rd, to New Hampshire just 5 days later. New Hampshire is not very favorable territory for Southerners. You can go back and look at the history. Jimmy Carter won it in 1976, but not by a whole lot. Bill Clinton finished second. John Edwards, after finishing second, did not do very well in New Hampshire. It's a really tough state for Southerners, so he may be looking ahead to South Carolina, which could be better for him. But again, there's the whole question of whether he has the infrastructure to capitalize on what has been a big, big surge, both in the both nationally and here in Iowa, where right now he's on top.
Now, of course, the political calendar has been moved up considerably this year. That's why you're in Iowa just before Christmas.
Yeah, ho, ho, ho.
Ho, ho, ho. To what extent are the people in Iowa sort of resentful of the fact that their holidays have been trampled by political candidates?
Well, I think you need to sort of distinguish between, let's call them for discussion's sake, normal people and political junkies like myself. You know, there's about 2 million and change Iowans, only about a couple hundred thousand, maybe a little more, will participate in the caucuses. So it's not like you have a huge mass of Iowans who are paying attention anyway. And for those people who don't care about politics, they're oblivious to the whole thing anyway. Amongst the people who are engaged and do care, I can tell tell you, they're still turning out. I was with Barack Obama over the weekend on a Saturday. I think it was at the time 6 degrees, and I think I got to remember the city we're in. We were in Independence. You know, you go from one to the other. We're in Independence, Iowa. 6 degrees out on a Saturday morning, and he got about 400 people. So caucus goers and the people who care about politics don't seem to mind it too much. They're making time between trimming the tree and gift shopping to go out and come out and hear the candidates. They do plan on shutting down on Christmas Day. I know that. There'll be no phone banking. There'll be no knocking on doors. But that's about the only time they're going to take off between now and January 3rd.
Now, in Iowa, John McCain has been nearly at the back of the pack in single digits for some time now. But today he's getting somewhat unusual endorsement from a fellow senator, Joe Lieberman, the independent Democrat from Connecticut. Is that going to have any impact on him in Iowa, or is it more of a help in New Hampshire, a little closer to Joe Lieberman's territory?
I think it helps him in both places. I think the bigger help to him was we talked about Hillary Clinton getting the endorsement of the Des Moines Register, which is a paper that circulates statewide and has considerable influence here in Iowa. John McCain, that was a real surprise. John McCain got the endorsement of the Des Moines Register, even though 4 years ago he skipped the state, even though he's pretty much skipped it this time and has come to Iowa and said some things that really aren't very popular, like we shouldn't be subsidizing ethanol, which is a huge industry. So that was a real surprise. Joe Lieberman is another one. That's definitely a falls in the man bites dog category. I think anything that draws attention to John McCain is going to help him. He's a candidate who is very, very underfunded, needs all the free publicity he can get, and he got the endorsement of not just the Register, also the Boston Globe and another paper in New Hampshire. The Globe circulates widely in New Hampshire. The Portsmouth Herald, another big paper in New Hampshire, endorsed John McCain, so he's building up some momentum, and at this point, I wouldn't be surprised to see him finish third in Iowa, and if he does, that could be a big boost for him.
How much do endorsements really matter, Mark, in a presidential race? It's one thing to get an endorsement if you're running for city council where people don't really know you that well, but does it matter so much in a presidential race?
Not really. I mean, there are endorsements. Some can matter more than others. The bottom line is, it's like chicken soup. It can't hurt and it might help. Different endorsements bring you different things. Again, I think the best thing that the endorsement brings for candidates like Clinton, for a candidate like McCain, is more attention. For Hillary Clinton, it sort of changed the narrative for a while, has been her campaign is in disarray. Barack Obama has all the momentum. Picking up the Des Moines Register endorsement like that changes the narrative a little bit. It gives her something to talk about. So I don't think very many people will say, well, you know what, fill in the blank, the Des Moines Register, Oprah Winfrey, Tom Vilsack, the former governor, the wife of the current governor, is going to do this, so I'm going to do the same thing. But it does get candidates' attention and gives them the opportunity then to make their pitch.
Are you seeing many Californians coming into Iowa and campaigning on behalf, I would assume, mostly of Democrats, but Schwarzenegger hasn't made an endorsement yet, but any Republicans or Democrats out there?
I haven't seen a whole lot lately. L.A. Mayor Antonio Villaraigosa was here a couple weeks ago, as was Assembly Speaker Fabian Nunez campaigning for Hillary Clinton. I know personally, just talking to friends and other people I know in the political business, I think a lot of people are going to be here with me on New Year's, coming in and volunteering and doing some phone banking. And you know, if you like politics, if you love politics and you can afford to get here, it really is sort of a political theme park, if you will. It's kind of, forgive the cliche, but it really truly for the next couple of weeks is the center of the political universe. You can go to any one of the handful of restaurants where people seem to congregate downtown and walk in, and at one table will be the campaign manager for one candidate and a network anchor for another and a pundit of some sort at another table. I mean, it really is, for political sightseeing, the place to be.
LA Times reporter Mark Baraback in Des Moines, Iowa this morning. Mark referred a moment ago to Los Angeles Mayor Antonio Villaraigosa, which brings up another topic that we want to discuss this hour, which is the urban agenda and whether or not the candidates for president are really addressing issues that matter a lot to people like most Americans who live in cities or in urban centers. And I want to begin to kick that off by listening to something that Los Angeles Mayor Antonio Villaraigosa had to say recently about that urban agenda and the 2008 presidential campaign. Let's listen.
The federal government has been almost absent in addressing the issues of our cities, whether it's the issue of poverty, work and opportunity, bolstering the middle class and working families, the investments that need to be made with respect to housing, infrastructure. It is absolutely criminal that the federal government has failed to address those issues.
Los Angeles Mayor Antonio Villaraigosa, and he's not alone. A few weeks ago, Reverend Jesse Jackson, who's endorsed Barack Obama, wrote an op-ed piece critical of the candidates for ignoring the concerns of African Americans, many of whom, of course, live in cities. So joining us now to talk about that urban agenda, what is it? Are the candidates talking about it? In addition to Mark Baraback from the LA Times, we've got Howard Husick, who's vice president for policy research at the Manhattan Institute for Policy Research, a conservative think tank in New York City. Also with us here in the studio, Jakarta Imani, who's executive director of the Ella Baker Center for Human Rights in Oakland. And joining us by phone, also Henry Gardner. He's executive director of the Association of Bay Area Governments. He previously served as city manager for the city of Oakland for many years. Welcome to all of you.
Good morning.
Let me begin with you, Jakarta Imani. What is your sense about, first of all, what is the urban agenda, if there is one, and are the candidates talking about it?
Well, you know, I think an urban agenda includes a new economic vision for the United States. We all know that jobs have been offshoring for years and years, and it's we hear about it, but there's not really a plan to put people back to work in the urban centers. We have higher unemployment rate, we have higher high school dropout rates, we have lower completion rates, lower rates of young people going on to college, and sadly and most tragically lately, you see it on the front pages of the local papers and hear about it on the radio, is a spike in violence. And what our research and what our work has shown us is that's really being driven by the fact that there's not an urban agenda, that the federal government has divested from everything from childcare to community colleges. And so it's sort of left the landscape in a lot of ways bleak.
When you say a new economic vision, what would that look like? What should it look like in your view?
Well, one of the things, you know, we've promoted and some of the presidential candidates have talked about is this idea of green jobs, of this idea of, you know, getting the United States off of fossil fuel. You're going to have to invest a lot of money retrofitting buildings, doing energy audits, finding new sources of energy. All that stuff is job creation, not just only business creation. And we think those kind of things are important. But then as well as, you know, putting this country back to work and having a vision that really does that and inspires people to do something different than what we've been doing.
Now, Bill Clinton was president for 8 years in the 90s. Were things that different for cities than they are now?
I think the lack of an urban agenda goes back, you know, much longer than that. I think it's a 20, 30-year problem. When you look at the U.S. landscape, cities and major metropolitan areas suck up so much resources, but there's also so much potential there, and there hasn't been a federal agenda or a federal policy driving housing infrastructure. I mean, the last time we really went on a building tear and built up the U.S. infrastructure was over 50 years ago. So the highways, bridges, roads, all, you know, ports, all that stuff are decades and decades old, and there hasn't been a vision or a platform for reinventing that stuff.
Henry Gardner, from your perspective with the Association of Bay Area Governments, what would you add to that agenda that Imani just described? Jakarta Imani, rather, sorry.
First, I would offer that one of the responses that we typically hear is that, you know, the federal government's focus should be on other issues. And I just remind everybody that great preamble to the United States Constitution, in addition to talking about providing for the common defense, also talks about ensuring domestic tranquility. And it also talks about promoting the general welfare. And I think all the issues that the mayor of Los Angeles has raised and others have raised about how we need to respond to just not urban issues, but basically local issues and regional issues, the national government absolutely has an obligation to provide leadership in some of these areas. And some of that leadership is not only articulating what the policy is, but backing it up with real money.
And are there any candidates out there that you hear talking about these issues?
I'm still listening. And let me tell you what some of them I think are, in addition to the ones that have been mentioned. One is we talk about leaving no child behind, but we're not serious about that. Many of the problems that we talk about in the urban centers particularly really go to the lack of quality education. Uneducated, undereducated people are the people who are constantly in the social services system. And unfortunately, those are the same ones we see in juvenile detention. They're the same ones we see in our state prisons and federal prisons. It also speaks to the issue of poverty. These are absolutely linked.
Well, now let me just stop you there, because John Edwards, for example, has made a very big deal out of poverty. He's been talking actually for longer than this campaign about the two Americas. Are you saying that he's not addressing those issues either, or that he's a lone voice in the wilderness, or the media is not covering it when the candidates talk about these things? What?
Oh, I think he has. I think that for every issue that we're probably going to identify, somebody has mentioned it, and you're absolutely right. John Edwards has spoken about the issue of poverty. But really what we're talking about is what you refer to as the urban, or what I would call the city agenda. And it's more than just poverty. It is also education. It is also crime, particularly crime amongst youth and young adults. And these are not issues city by city. These are national issues. They're national problems. But what they're also not talking about, something that I'm involved in absolutely, is the need for public infrastructure, particularly for public transit. We're talking about trying to rebuild cities. We're talking about reducing reliance on automobiles. We're only going to do that with massive investments. All these things absolutely cost money. I don't want to get political about it, but we have also found the means to spend hundreds of billions of dollars for the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan, and we have not raised any taxes. It is a question of priority. Somebody made a reference to housing. Housing is an urgent issue, again, for all of our cities, and particularly here in California, but one that absolutely has not been spoken of, and Katrina is a classic example. No real federal strategy for dealing with emergency preparedness, emergency response, and recovery.
I want to bring Howard Husig into the conversation from the Manhattan Institute in New York, which tends to promote market-oriented solutions to social problems. And I'm wondering, Howard Husig, do you hear any new vision for the economy coming from either Republicans or Democrats, one that you think resonates with the kinds of positions that your organization likes to talk about?
Well, first of all, I certainly agree with the previous speakers that the health of our cities is just a crucial indicator of the health of the country. And the discussion that we should have as a society is about how do we make sure that the disadvantaged are given the most opportunity and our cities are as vibrant as they can be. And so any discussion that I think we have is one of means, not ends. Maybe in the service of a bit of a reality check in terms of the mayor of Los Angeles' comments about the federal government being wholly absent, one can disagree about the extent of spending or how much priority has been put on it, but we should not lose sight of the fact that over the last 30 years, a very significant number of ongoing federal programs aimed at improving urban life remain in place. So, for instance, we have the Enterprise Zone program. We have the Low-Income Housing Tax Credit program, which has produced hundreds of thousands of affordable housing units, if you like that kind of thing. We have the Earned Income Tax Credit, which supplements the earnings of the working poor, and now outstrips by a long shot public assistance programs. It's now an almost $40 billion program. Section 8, which is a housing voucher supplement primarily directed at the cities, was a $9 billion program in 1998, and today it's an almost $17 billion program. That list goes on and on. Many, many programs are simply on automatic pilot directing billions of dollars to the cities. And so to say wholly absent is, I think, an exaggeration.
So would you like to hear the candidates talking about redirecting some of those funds, changing the priorities? Do you think the programs you've mentioned are working?
I think there's reason to be concerned about whether they're working as well as they should be. But I think the underlying issue here when we talk about an urban agenda is the following. There was, for a long time after the 1960s, a kind of an assumption that our cities were basket cases, that they really couldn't come back absent kind of what would often be called a Marshall Plan for cities. Expensive and extensive federal interventions. I think what we've seen is a lot of cities have had the benefit, if you will, of those kind of extensive interventions, and they've not revived. And we've also had a split in this country where a number of cities have started to do much, much better based on the realization that they themselves control a lot of the levers for their own renaissance. And so, for instance, when we talk about crime, obviously crime has gone down in a great many cities. New York is the probably leading example, 24 400 murders in 1990, under 500 so far this year. We can't lose sight of this kind of progress. We can't simply dismiss it. Second, infrastructure is being approached at the local level by visionary mayors, Democrats, many of them. So, for instance, we have Mayor Daley in Chicago has found a way to get foreign investment, not to take away jobs, but to maintain his bridges and highways, the Chicago Skyway. And we see this kind of resourcefulness among mayors. Mayor Hickenlooper of Denver, who is also a Democrat, has adopted what's called broken windows policing, attention to small crimes that are often indicators, leading edges of larger crime waves. If those can be stopped, then crime generally can go down. And it's gone down in Denver, not because of federal intervention, but because of the resourcefulness of local mayors.
That's
is there
hard.
A federal role? Certainly, but let's not lose sight of the fact that we've changed the paradigm and local mayors can really make a big difference.
That's Howard Husick from the Manhattan Institute. Mark Baraback, you're in Iowa with these candidates. What are you hearing? Are they talking about the kinds of things that Jakata Amani, Henry Gardner, and Howard Husick are talking about? Is there an urban agenda being discussed in the cornfields of Iowa?
Absolutely. And, you know, every party needs a pooper, and I guess I'm it. I disagree with just about everything I heard regarding the campaign, ignoring these issues. I think that's something of, dare I say, an urban legend, if you will. It's important to distinguish between the federal government. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about the candidates. The candidates are talking about these issues. There was some discussion about money going toward the war in Iraq rather than being spent on cities. Look, every day the candidates are on the trail. They're talking about infrastructure. They're talking about education. They're talking about crime. They're talking about the war in Iraq. I think there's this focus on trees, but the candidates are talking about the forest. And I think we would all agree that whatever money goes toward one program, i.e. the war in Iraq, is not going toward other programs. They're talking about national priorities, and they're talking about crime. I was with Barack Obama. I'm not going to give his campaign speech chapter and verse, but he was talking about putting $18 billion into education to boost teacher salaries. He was talking about a program that would bring young people into the inner cities to teach in return for some of their college tuition being paid. These issues are coming up every day. I will tell you, I was struck last March. I spent a lot of time in Iowa. I was with John Edwards, 2 days, 6 stops all across Iowa. Iowa, he was asked every single stop about immigration. Barack Obama, a standard part of his stump speech, talks about a day he spent in Oakland with an SEIU worker. So, again, I think it's an urban legend, this idea that these candidates are not discussing these issues. They are. They're talking about them every day.
Is there a different way of talking about immigration when you're in a somewhat rural place like Iowa versus in a city? Are there different aspects of these same issues that get emphasized?
I haven't heard that, frankly. Iowa does. I mean, it's not all, you know, cows and silos. There are cities here. One of the biggest one is a place called Marshalltown, which has a very significant Latino population. And you can go there, and there are neighborhoods there where you think you're in East Los Angeles. And a lot of the issues in terms of workers, the notion that jobs are being taken, quote-unquote, the idea that these workers are being exploited, the idea that these workers are driving down wages, I think the bigger difference is between the Republicans versus the Democrats in terms of what they're emphasizing. Republicans much more a tough shut down the border policy. Democrats much more in terms of some pathway to citizenship. But I have not found, and I have covered these candidates all across this country, I don't find them talking about the issue any differently here than elsewhere. Because as I said, I think the issues here with immigration are very similar to the ones that are taking place in cities across the country.
All right, and we're going to come back with more of our discussion here on Forum. We'd love you to join us. The phone number is 866-733-6786. That's 866-733-6786. You can also email us at forum@kqed.org. Again, that's forum@kqed.org. I'm Scott Schaefer here this morning for Michael Krasny. We've got much more in the hour ahead. And welcome back to Forum. Scott Schaefer here today for Michael Krasny. And this hour we're talking about the presidential campaign, in particular the urban agenda. Is there one? Are the candidates talking about it? And what would you like to hear? Are they addressing issues that you care about living here in the Bay Area or wherever it is you might be living? Our guests are Mark Barabak from the Los Angeles Times. He's in Des Moines, Iowa this morning. Also here, Howard Husick, Vice President for Policy Research at the Manhattan Institute for Policy Research, a conservative think tank in New York City. Also Jakarta Imani, Executive Director of the Ella Baker Center for Human Rights in Oakland. And Henry Gardner, Executive Director of the Association of Bay Area Governments. And if you'd like to join our conversation, again, the number is 866-733-6786, 866-733-6786. Let me just, before we go to the calls, Mark Barabak was talking about the fact that the candidates are addressing these issues. And I wonder, Henry Gardner, does that surprise you? Why do you think you're not hearing about it?
I'm not in Iowa. And I do not hear, and I want to say this as firmly as I can, I don't hear every word that the candidates utter, but I read the newspaper, the best ones, every single day. The fact that somebody mentions something in a sentence or two is not a platform and it's not a strategy. I haven't heard it. I haven't seen it.
So is that a criticism of the media then, or what is it?
I don't know. The question was whether or not the candidates are speaking to an urban agenda. First of all, I don't know what the urban agenda is, but for the issues that I think are important to particularly this region, and indeed I think, and again, I keep saying not just to cities, not just to urban areas, but to all communities, to all cities. All of these issues affect, most of them at least, affect most places where people live. If candidates have a platform and a strategy around many of these issues we've raised, I've not seen it and I've not heard it.
Jakarta Imani, what about you?
Yeah, you know, I'm not as much as a political junkie as our friend in Iowa, but I've heard politicians give speeches my whole life, and that's very different than a real fundamental plan. And you can see it time and time again. A lot of the programs, the low-income housing, Section 8s, in terms of real actual impact, those dollars have been cut. In terms of like that there's a Section 8 waiting list in Berkeley that is 10,000 people long, that we know there's not a need when we're not talking about Watts, when we're not talking about Philadelphia, but we're talking about the city of Berkeley has a waiting list for Section 8 that's 10,000 people long. And so we know that there's a difference between the rhetoric of the campaign trail and the actual implementable program. And that's what I'm getting at.
Let's go to the phones now. Chuck is on the line in San Francisco. Hi, Chuck.
Hi. Thanks very much. I think that the Constitution itself gives a disproportionate political influence to the rural states, both through the Electoral College and through the distribution of representatives, for example, the distribution of senators. It's not proportional to population. So not only in the issues that you've been talking about, but in things like distribution of Homeland Security funds where, you know, places where there are a lot of targets like New York City and other urban centers don't get, I think, the logical amount of funding they should get for that compared to, you know, some mall in the Midwest or something, and things like agricultural subsidies. I think to a great extent the people of the United States have been the victims of the Great Compromise, to quote John Prine. So I think that's a real phenomenon, and I think you can trace a lot of it to the nature of the the structure set up in the Constitution.
Henry Gardner, any thoughts about that?
Well, you know, the Electoral College has been debated for the last 200 plus years, and we experienced it most recently. I don't see any fundamental changes occurring in that anytime soon. But I think the caller makes a good point, and that is that, you know, obviously the candidates are trying to balance a number of things. The strategy, I should say, is to get nominated, and the other strategy is to get elected. And then we hope for the best. But I don't see this country really making any reform to the Electoral College. I think it is what it is.
Mark Barabak, this is a little bit of inside baseball, but the caller referred to a disproportionate amount of influence in this country from rural parts of the United States. And isn't that somewhat true in Iowa as well in terms of the caucuses? There's a cover story about John Edwards and how he's focusing on rural parts of Iowa, in part because of the sort of the Byzantine structure of the caucuses. You don't need as many people to get just as much support in the caucuses as you would in, say, an urban area.
Yeah, I agree with to some extent with what the caller said as for the way the system was set up, stacking what were then smaller, more rural states, giving them disproportionate power in the Senate and the Electoral College, all that is true. But again, I go back fundamentally to the idea that, you know, the issues that people care about in these small states, with some exceptions, obviously, ethanol in a state like Iowa, these massive industrial pig farms and the effluent problems they cause in places like South Carolina, the peripheral canal in California. Obviously, there are local regional issues, but the issues, you go to these small rural towns, and what do people ask about? They ask about the war, they ask about health care, they ask about education, they ask about immigration. There's not that huge a gap. And I want to go back and address, I don't want to relitigate the point, but I do want to go back and say the way campaigns work, what candidates will do will be to lay out a platform and give a major policy speech. No, they don't repeat those speeches day in and day out on the trail, but the information is there. Go to their website. If you want to know what a candidate's urban policy is, go to their website. They've got white papers. They've got details. They have platforms.
All right, Chuck, thanks for the call. Next is Kelly in Sunnyvale. Hi, Kelly.
Hi. I sort of want to follow up on what was just said about John Edwards. His platform is based on poverty, and it was 4 years ago as well. I think the problem is that the mainstream media is not giving him the attention he deserves. They've already nominated somebody, and so the rest of us aren't hearing about what his platform is. He does have an urban agenda, and he's got it all spelled out on his website.
He does indeed, but I think as Mark Baraback said, the Democrats are talking about it. Mark, but to what extent are Republicans really talking about this issue? I know there's been a lot of focus on immigration and Iraq. You've got a former mayor of a big city running, Rudy Giuliani. Are you surprised by what they are or are not talking about with regard to cities?
Well, as you mentioned, Rudy Giuliani is talking a lot about what he's done in the city in New York and probably more than any other candidate out there on the Republican side. Obviously, being a mayor, he talks about an urban agenda. I mean, the Republican debate has been focused less on those sorts of issues, more on things like the war, foreign policy, immigration in particular. But you know, again, if you step back, all these things, I think, are interrelated. I think when you talk about immigration, that affects cities. When you talk about global warming, people in cities are affected by global warming. So, again, I just don't see these lines of delineation between this is an urban issue and that one isn't.
Howard Husick, to a certain extent, the urban agenda also comes with a big price tag. You know, if you talk about things like infrastructure, housing, a lot of federal dollars, and I'm wondering if you think that to any extent the candidates avoid specifics on those kinds of issues because they do cost a lot of money or can cost a lot of money depending on how you approach them.
Well, I think any prudent candidate looks at the entitlement time bomb that's out there regarding Medicare, Medicaid, Social Security, and realizes that absent a massive tax increase, and maybe even with a massive tax increase, because that could decrease the revenue take that the federal government gets, there's not going to be a whole lot of money available for discretionary spending. And so grants and aid possibility, but I think that's why we're seeing resourceful mayors saying, gee, maybe we got to find a way to get private capital in here to rebuild our bridges. Maybe we have to lease out our toll roads rather than letting them fall into disrepair. So it may be time for cities not to wait on the federal government because the federal government's pretty overcommitted.
Jakarta Mani, I don't know if this is a fair question or not, but we have Barack Obama, an African-American, seriously challenging Hillary Clinton and John Edwards for the nomination. He comes from Chicago. He was an organizer in Chicago. Are you at all disappointed at the extent to which he is or isn't addressing the issues that you talked about at the beginning?
I'm not disappointed. I think that it's a... I think the way the game is set up, the early states, disproportionately white, disproportionately rural. One of the things we haven't sort of surfaced is the term urban. In a lot of people's minds, they think of black and brown people. And in my mind, I think of black and brown people. And when we talk about setting an urban agenda, you're talking about setting an urban agenda for people who are on the margins of U.S. society and trying to bring them into the center and trying to offer opportunities for them to advance their lives. I think that that's a difficult conversation to have in the United States, particularly in a situation where we're feeling as though we have less, where everybody's feeling squeezed. People start worrying about themselves. So I think that, you know, Senator Obama has taken some great stamps. I think Senator Clinton has done some interesting stuff. Senator Edwards has been talking about poverty, you know, since the last presidential election. I'm not confused about that. I think, though, that one, it's not discussed across the fields. You don't have Republicans really looking at what's happening in urban America. You have some of them still debating whether or not post-Hurricane Katrina, whether or not global climate change is happening, and how real it is and how important it is. So I don't think that the country as a whole has taken this these issues seriously and has woken up to them broadly, not just Senator Obama.
To your point, we got an email from Jim in Pacifica. He says, I'd like the guests to talk about the primary process and how it distorts our so-called democratic republic. Mark Baraback, there's been a lot of discussion over the years about the front-loading of these two very homogeneous states, relatively white states, overwhelmingly white states, Iowa and New Hampshire. Do you get a sense that that skews the agenda at all?
Well, this will surprise you, but maybe it won't surprise you. I'm once again the contrarian here. No, I don't think it does to a huge extent. Look, I'm a Californian. I was born there. I was raised there. If I don't fall over dead and get buried in a cornfield, that's where I hope to wind up. I think Iowa and New Hampshire do a very good job, actually. I think it's good we start in a small state where Mike Huckabee, who was ignored to a large extent by the mainstream media, surged into contention on the basis of being able to go town to town, voter to voter, build up support in the way that he has. I think it's a good system. I think, like I said, everyone wants them to talk about this particular issue of local concern, that particular issue of local concern. These are national campaigns. I think they address broad issues. I don't think it skews the system terribly. I think it's good that we start in small states. And I think voters here do a very good job, frankly, of culling the field. I think they're smart. I think they're engaged. I think if you were to look, there's a much higher per capita participation in politics in places like Iowa and New Hampshire because it is a part of their culture. And if you don't start here, what do? Do you start in a place like California where you need to spend $4 million a week on advertising? Who can compete except very, very rich people? So it's good we start, I think, in small states. And the other thing, too, I want to say, finally, this is a long campaign. I've been covering this for a couple years, and I got another year or so to go. We're talking about this as if it's done, it's over, it's set. There's a long time still to come, and these issues can come up, and they will come up in the next year.
And would you say that it's more likely they'll come up in a focused way during the when it gets down to two or three candidates if we have an independent running?
You know, here's the beauty part of our system. If you want to be elected president, you got to talk about things that people care about. So if people care about these things enough, they are going to be subjects of conversation. They're going to come up. They're going to be brought up. They're going to be a part of the debate because you have to address them if you want to be elected.
We're talking about the presidential campaign, as you might have noticed, and the urban agenda. What is it, and are the candidates talking about it? Our number here, 866-733-6786. Again, 866-733-6786. Jakarta Mani, did you have your hand up, or were we just...
Every time our friend in Iowa speaks, I get a little tense, but...
I don't have my hand up. This is Henry Gardner, because you can't see my hand.
You do have it up?
I do have my hand up.
Or why don't you go ahead?
I do want to come back to this issue of how these issues are being raised and presented. The fact that somebody has something on a website doesn't do it for me. And maybe the issue really is how do we engage the candidates in the debates themselves to address these issues.
Do you think that comes back?
Not with one sentence, but to talk about what their real strategy is. And again, it has to be larger than just, in my opinion, larger than just the big metropolitan areas.
Do you think, though, that perhaps the smaller venues like Iowa are more conducive to that? Could we have a conversation like that in California?
I hope we will.
Let's go back to the phones. Oakland is our next stop. Sabrina is on the line. Sabrina, welcome to the show. Actually, I think maybe Robert. Okay, Robert, are you with us?
Yes, I am.
Hi, welcome to the show.
Thank you. I have two questions/comments. One of the things that's absolutely puzzled me and mystified me for the last 25 years, is this, I don't understand our system. It seems to me that we're not voting for ideas anyways. We're not voting for economic or social programs. We're voting for individuals, for people, someone who's marketed. That's why you have a senator from the Carolinas who looks more like Oprah Winfrey, an actual political or economic representative. We don't talk about the Democratic Party stands for A, B, C, D, or the Republican Party. One's considered conservative, the other one's liberal, and that's the end of that. Goodbye. But in terms of social programs, in terms of economic policies, I agree with Ralph Nader. There's really no difference. And the other point that I want to make is that just the perfect classic example of how this country is moving forward, minus any socialist ideas, which is the worst taboo of all, is how we create economic programs. One of the great economic programs that the world can look at is not only the military-industrial complex, but the prison-industrial complex. We don't reduce crime. What we do is we turn it into a business that is profitable for a small number of people.
Okay, let me just see if we can get a comment from our guests. And I wonder how...
I have one, yeah.
Okay, go ahead.
Well,
is that Howard?
Howard Husick. Howard Husick. I'm not a socialist. You're not surprised to know that, but I agree with the caller that one of the big issues that we haven't talked about that relates to cities is the wave of people who are going to be coming out of prisons. We're talking about 700,000 people a year are going to be released from our prisons. And I think mayors all over the country are scared about how they're going to reintegrate this ex-offender population. They don't have good programs in place. I personally think, and the Manhattan Institute believes, that jobs programs, that is, rapid placement in jobs programs, not government jobs programs, can be effective. But we ought to have a national conversation about that because it's going to be a big problem for the cities.
Howard Husick, do you share at all the concern of Robert, our last caller, that this does seem to be, to a certain extent, personality-driven, that it's about how people feel about the candidates, whether they seem likable, whether they want to go have lunch with them or go have a beer with them? Does it make it harder to break through with discussion of serious policies like the ones that the Manhattan Institute puts forward?
Well, us policy wonks always want people to be more policy wonkish, but I think people have pretty good sense to keep politics in just one corner of their lives and not get overly obsessed with it. They can leave that to the people like us who are probably too involved in it.
All right, let's go back to the phones in Oakland. Let's try Sabrina again. Hi, Sabrina.
Sure. Thanks for taking my call this time.
Sure.
I wanted to point out that while I agree that health and education are issues that probably unite the rural and suburban and urban areas, that transportation and transit in particular is an issue that divides urban and rural and suburban, that when it comes to funding around transit and alternatives to the automobile, there's often a huge divide and debate between those regions. And getting away from using the automobile is something that I think is a difference and something that could be addressed.
Henry Gardner, as someone with the Association of Bay Area Governments, which spans suburbs and even some rural parts of the Bay Area, do you agree with that?
Public transit is a challenge, and the challenge is basically money. And the caller is right. When there is a higher emphasis on public transit, meaning basically in this area, the Bay Area Rapid Transit District, Muni, AC Transit, DTA down in San Jose, it does create this kind of divide about how the money gets split up. But I think that if we're going to grow in a sustainable way, we have no choice but to make far greater investments in these public transit systems than we're doing today, which then means that we have to make some compromises about some other infrastructure, like highway expansions and improvements.
Howard Husick, public transit, is that something your organization thinks we ought to be putting more money into?
Well, I think we have to, again, recognize that we've invested billions in public transportation systems that have relatively low ridership. I mean, BART's a good one, but you can go to Miami, you can go to St. Louis, and you can see rapid transit systems that have had billions in federal dollars and relatively low ridership. We need to be smart about how we invest in transit, and I think we're seeing cities all over the world adopt congestion pricing schemes that help to make highways flow more freely. We're seeing that in California, of course, and we also have to be creative. It may be that the most cost-effective way to help move people from here to there via public transit are bus lanes and buses. So we shouldn't get hung up on the most expensive and let those be the only things that we think about.
Mark Baraback in Iowa, I don't imagine there's a lot of traffic jams where you are, but except maybe around the candidates. But is transportation an issue you hear discussed much?
That has been not spoken about as much. Bill Richardson, of all the candidates, the governor from New Mexico, has talked about transportation, has talked about mass transit and those sorts of things. I mean, the candidates talk about it to the extent they talk about infrastructure in the broad sense. I mean, Iowa actually is a big driving state. You know, things are very, very spread out here. People spend a lot of time driving in their cars. That is an issue, though, in terms of mass transit that has not gotten as much discussion, certainly here in Iowa.
I wonder, thanks, Sabrina, for the call. I wonder if any of you, any of our guests, hear any big ideas this year that are truly different. We've had a big discussion around health care, but let me start with you, I guess, Henry Gardner. Maybe you were saying at the beginning you're still waiting to hear those ideas, but is there anything that has sparked your imagination, any kind of a different approach to these issues?
I have not heard it.
How about you, Jakarta Money?
Well, you know, I have, and it oddly comes from them listening, some of the Democratic frontrunner candidates listening to us and our work around green-collar jobs and bringing, taking folks who most need work and putting them to work doing the works that most needs being done in terms of averting climate change, which I think is really important. But, you know, one of the things that I want to point out, though, about Iowa is Iowa is almost 95% white. While the rest of the country is only 80% white. And so the issues that you talk about when you have that 15% shift and the things that resonate are just different. I mean, we can argue about the nuances, but when you look at the numbers, when you look at there's less than 3% black people in Iowa, when there's 12%, almost 13% in the country, there's actually going to be different messaging in those early states. There's actually going to be different info.
Go ahead. Sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off.
No, no, no.
Yeah.
The different influence and different focus.
Mark Baerbeck, do you sense that given that we do have a prominent African-American, a Latino running on the Democratic side, to what extent is race part of the discussion in this presidential cycle the way it was, say, in 1988 when Jesse Jackson was running?
I don't think it is as much an issue. I think to the extent that it's an issue, there's sort of the, you know, is America ready to elect a fill-in-the-blank, woman, Mormon, African-American, Latino? Maybe it's a sign of progress. You don't hear a lot of that sort of discussion in terms the way you did, certainly, in 1988. And I just want to go back. I mean, I don't want to make this point counterpoint, but, you know, again, I disagree. I think that we're hearing a lot of these issues. I think just because people are white doesn't mean that they don't care about inner cities, doesn't mean they don't care about black-on-black crime, doesn't mean they don't care about inner-city crime, inner-city schools, those sorts of things. Again, I've heard rather extensive discussions of those in Iowa, in New Hampshire, in Oakland, in South Carolina.
There's been some discussion, too, that if you'll forgive the phrase, that Huckabee has been something of a compassionate conservative, you know, someone who has expressed concern for the poor, for people sort of downtrodden, taking positions, for example, on immigration that are a little more conciliatory, a little more compassionate. Is that your sense that may be part of his appeal in some way?
Well, immigration you bring up, and I need to say on immigration, he's actually gone the opposite direction. As he's risen in the polls and become more prominent, he's changed and hardened his views. He was more compassionate. He expressed concern in particular. There was a raid on a big processing plant in Arkansas he was quite outraged over. Now he's coming out with a plan to round up all the illegal immigrants and ship them back. You know, he said they found a way to get here, let them find a way to get back. That's the one issue where he's sort of gone more to the right. He has, though, talked a very populist line for a Republican. He's talked about outrageous CEO salaries and executives making multiple times what an average worker makes. So he has been sounding on economic issues, certainly a more populist, almost democratic sort of theme.
Let's go back to the phones and all the way up to Anchorage, Alaska. Erica's on the line. Hi, Erica.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I wanted to ask the guest's opinion on the issue of food issues and agricultural subsidies. I'm kind of thinking of, you know, books like Fast Food Nation and Michael Pollan's The Omnivore's Dilemma that has raised our attention in terms of the connection between human health, what's being served in school lunch, access to healthy, organic food.
Interesting question, especially in Iowa. subsidies. Yeah, yeah. Of course, ag subsidy is always a big issue in Iowa. Mark, any sense that some of the concerns about, say, all the fructose and corn syrup in our diets that comes from subsidized corn? Any discussion of that in Iowa?
Well, two answers to that question. I mean, the candidates, none of them have covered themselves in glory, with perhaps the exception of John McCain, when it comes to ethanol. You know, that's a big issue now. We want to put more ethanol into our fuel. As a result, you're driving up food prices around the world. And none of the candidates have covered themselves in glory. They're all doing the ethanol is a wonderful thing sort of pander here in Iowa. On the issue of the food that's being served kids, you have heard some discussion about Bill Richardson in particular, who will say he has personally fought with weight issues his whole life, talks about what he's done in New Mexico in terms of making school lunches more nutritional. A lot of the candidates talk about it in the context of health care. That's a big thing on both sides. They talk about prevention, healthier diets, that sort of stuff. So you do hear some discussion of that as well.
All right, Erica, thanks for the call. I want to read an email with a different perspective, kind of an interesting one. Glenn writes, it's hard to stomach a discussion asking rural areas to put up more funds to pay for urban programs when urban cities have so much wealth. I come from a small California Central Valley town and have lived in a lower-income area of San Francisco. The houses in my neighborhood averaged $700,000. That figure would buy the nicest homes in my current hometown. There's plenty of money in urban areas. You just can't get it from your neighbors, but you shouldn't expect it to come from small communities who can barely afford to buy a fire truck. Henry Gardner, are we just complaining here in big cities and not really knowing how good we have it?
Oh, I think there is a perception that perhaps the urban areas get more of the resources, and there probably is a perception that it's disproportionate. There is also the perception, it's not a perception, it's a reality. One of our guests said that we've spent billions and billions and billions of dollars on various things. Indeed, we have spent billions and billions and millions of dollars. The fact is, we haven't spent enough. We have not spent enough. With respect to any disproportionate amount, I get back to what the national government's role is, and that is to promote the general welfare for everybody.
Okay, Henry Gardner, I'm going to have to ask you to stop your thought right there because we are out of time. Henry Gardner with the Association of Bay Area Governments, thanks to you for being here this hour. Thanks also to Howard Husick from the Manhattan Institute for Policy Research, and Jakarta Imani from the Ella Baker Center for Human Rights in Oakland, and to Mark Baraback from the Los Angeles Times in Iowa this morning. Thanks to all of you. Thanks to our listeners as well. Sorry to those of you whose call we didn't get to. Forum's producers are Kevin Guillory and Tina Lauerberg. Our senior editor is Dan Zoll. Our engineer today is Danny Bringer, and our executive producer is Raul Ramirez. I'm Scott Schaefer, here today for Michael Krasny. Thanks so much for listening.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Claude and Louise Rosenberg Jr. Family Foundation.